This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Toastmasters Podcast. My name is Bo Bennett.
And my name is Ryan Levesque.
We're doing a lot of great shows lately, aren't we, Ryan?
Absolutely. And that's what we're all about.
This is no exception. Ryan, why don't you introduce our guest?
Certainly. For those who've had a chance to look at the June 2010 issue of the Toastmaster magazine, you will recognize our guest today. His name is Dan Caro. While in the family garage at the age of 2 years old, the pilot light of a hot water heater ignited gasoline fumes, and Dan sustained third-degree burns to over 70% of his body. After being rescued by local firefighters, he was rushed to New Orleans Charity Hospital, where he underwent emergency surgery and was transported by medevac to the Shriners Burns Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts, where he would undergo many reconstructive surgeries and other treatments throughout his childhood. Ultimately, as a result of the burn injuries, Dan lost his right hand, and most of his left hand is severely scarred. In the mid-1980s, reconstructive surgery was performed on his left hand, giving him the use of a movable thumb. Since then, Dan has been living life to the fullest in the face of his adversity. His relentless attitude and resiliency would consistently prove that nothing is impossible, including his lifelong dream of becoming a musician. Dan is an ambassador for the Shriners of North America. He is also a professional speaker and the author of the book, The Gift of Fire, How I Made Adversity Work for Me, published by Hay House. Mr. Dan Caro, welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast.
Welcome, Dan.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Ryan and Bo. It's good to be here.
It is great to have you with us.
Good to have you.
Dan, I want to start off to ask you, with basically no hands and the use of one thumb, could you tell us a little bit about what's day-to-day life like for you? Are you able to do normal activities without assistance, like eating, driving, those sorts of things?
Yes, I am. Now, you know, at age 30, I can do everything. But growing up without fingers, it was quite a challenge. Tasks, normal everyday things, such as tying my shoes, proved to be these monumental undertakings. I call tying my shoes actually the greatest struggle I've ever faced and the greatest achievement.
Wow.
It was a 7-year battle with that. Imagine failing every day trying to tie your shoes for 7 straight years.
Wow.
It's just because of a lack of dexterity and the fact that I don't have much to work with. And but I just wanted to be an equal to everybody. And if they were tying their shoes, then that was what I was going to do, regardless of how long it took, regardless of how much energy it took and effort. I just wanted to fit in and be an equal. And that meant tying my shoes no matter what. Now, fortunately, some of the other tasks, buttoning shirts and combing hair, brushing teeth, eating, came a little bit easier. But everything was a great challenge. I mean, when you don't have fingers, it's a pretty big deal just to do the simple pedestrian tasks.
Yeah.
So it was challenging, but very rewarding once I achieved my goals with that. So.
Well, Dan, you're going to be an inspiration to my son. He's 9 years old. He's been trying to tie his shoes for 2 years now, and he gave up. He's a child of the generation where we have the Velcro shoes, so he's never been exposed to laces before.
I got you.
It's funny. Dan, at 2 years old, I'm sure you probably don't remember the actual accident, but you were for years undergoing surgeries after that. I would imagine you remember that stage. Is that correct?
I do. I remember pretty much everything once I got released from my initial 4-month stay. I underwent 80 surgeries and countless other outpatient procedures and rehabilitation, physical therapies, and other little minor details over the course of about 18 years after the accident. So I kind of lived in a hospital, you could say. I remember it vividly. But even though I spent a lot of that time in a hospital, and that was sort of unfortunate, the hospital that I went to through the Shriners Hospitals for Children Network was a pleasant experience for a hospital experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Shriners are a world-class facility that offer free medical treatment to kids under 18 suffering from burns, orthopedic conditions, spinal cord injury, and cleft lip and palate. And it's very much a community environment in those hospitals. They have all sorts of gatherings in psychology and child therapy, music therapy. The nurses are very pleasant. They come and check on you all the time. Unfortunately, that really doesn't work in our medical system once you get out of a children's type hospital. But the Shriners were my greatest support unit outside of my own parents and family, and they've really done a great job at treating treating the whole person rather than just the condition that I faced, the burns. And they also went into the community, my community, and all of our patients that we've treated over the years. I am a Shriner now also. But we go into the communities and kind of help to teach people how to accept, how to, you know, be acceptance and integrate the family into a society that might not face this situation day to day. So going through the school system was a challenge in the very beginning, but because of the Shriner support and the way my parents were able to help because of the training of the Shriners, it was easier to get involved and to settle into those situations. So,
yeah, Dan, obviously, if anyone is qualified to have this discussion, it's you. But I just can't even imagine if you're dealing with a young child who's undergone some disfiguring burns, what do you begin to say to them to basically help them move on with their life and regain self-esteem and confidence and all of those things?
Well, first of all, when you're very young, I think it's a lot easier. Mm-hmm. Because you have very limited experience in the world. So you're focused more on just adaptation of what the challenges are at hand. Mm-hmm. Simple everyday things like picking up a pencil and learning how to write, that takes up pretty much all of your time. So you don't really have a lot of time to dwell in the agony of being different or being burned. Mm-hmm. Granted, there will be times when you face out in the social situations where people come at you with, you're a monster, and they run away and scream, and that will get to you. But I guess if you had to give advice to a very young kid or kind of nurture that kid, find their strengths. You know, I heard the term, we're not disabled, we're diff-abled. You know, it's just we all have abilities. It's just some have different abilities than others. Mm. So you kind of got to find that child's abilities where they excel. And they will. Trust me, everybody has wonderful talents and abilities. So don't dwell on the negative. Mm. If you dwell on the problem, that's all you're going to get is more of that negativity and more resistance from society. If you dwell on the positives of life, I think you're destined for greatness. And regardless of your adversity, that's the big variable. It can be anything: burns, car accident, financial struggle, whatever. As long as you're focusing on your strengths and basically tolerance and love and appreciation for yourself and for everybody else, I think that even the greatest struggles are not that big of a deal. Hmm. I look back at my life now and I say, wow, I've gone through a lot, but I never really had a bad day. Because even in my worst situations when I was in it, I thought it was the end of the world and I couldn't get through this, like tying my shoes and whatnot. But now I look back and see how well it served me, see how well it's built my character, and I have a resiliency and this never give up attitude, and I can honestly, you know, take on anything. I love a challenge. So you've kind of got to twist the scenario a little bit, change your perspective, and see positivity in the face of negativity. And it's different from person to person. Mm-hmm. All I would do is just love, love, love the child. Show them that they're capable of everything. Don't do much for them. Allow them to do it and offer help, you know, a little bit as they go along. But the earlier they learn how to gain independence, you know, the better they're going to do throughout the long term. So kind of let the child, I don't want to say fail because it's kind of a bad word in my terms, but let the child hit some walls before you kind of step up and offer assistance. My parents were very great because they allowed me the space to learn things on my own, to adapt on my own. And fortunately, I did. And it took a long time for certain tasks, but I'm so grateful to them for giving me that opportunity to learn on my own.
That's wonderful. So, Dan, you were talking about talents before, and we know that you have some pretty good talents. Why don't you tell us about your drumming?
Well, after I successfully tied my shoes for the first time at age 12, after a seven-year battle, I felt as though I could do anything. You know, I felt so liberated, and I wanted to take on the next biggest challenge, and I thought drumming would be that. And, of course, once again, I faced a major struggle with these things. You know, hands, if you want to call them. They're not really hands. I call them handlets sometimes. But I come up with a way, because I can't grip with this hand at all. So I would come up with an external device after trial and error, using many failed techniques, super glue, duct tape, all kinds of painful things. I was 12. I really wanted to play, and whatever it took, I was going to try. But ultimately, we stumbled upon a very simple device, which is simply a tennis wristband with rubber bands wrapped around them. And I just put it over my wrist on the right hand and put a drumstick in there. And now I can play drums with this hand. And then on my left hand, they had the Shriners built, reconstructed a thumb, a movable thumb for me a while ago when I was very young. And I can grip the stick here. And like anybody, it just takes discipline and practice. And, of course, it took me a lot to build the strength because I wasn't using those muscles like a person with hands does every day.
Right.
So I had to really, really, really work at it. But I loved it so much, I didn't care what it took. I didn't care that, you know, I would pay literally in blood, sweat, and tears to do this. All I wanted to do was play drums. And, of course, growing up in the New Orleans area, I was exposed to some of the greatest music in the world since birth. And I wanted to emulate those rhythms and play with those musicians. And whatever it took to do that was what I was going to do. And over the next, you know, 10 years or so, fortunately, I was able to begin to get on the stage with some of those great musicians that I looked up to and admired, you know, at a very young age. And when I hit 18, I kind of just took off and went on the road and started playing with them out in public on the road and started recording a few records and just enjoying being a musician.
That's what I was most impressed about. You weren't just there with your drumsticks banging on the kitchen table. You actually went out and did something and semi-professionally. Would you consider yourself semi-pro, an amateur? What category would you put
yourself in? I'd say pro all the way.
Yeah, I was going to say it's kind of sounds pro. You're making music, you're making CDs.
Well, I toured extensively from age 18 to age 25. I wasn't ever home, so I'd go all the way pro.
All right.
Some of the finest musicians in the world. So
that's pro.
You know, a lot of the major music festivals and some of the finest clubs, music venues in the United States. So, yeah, it's something that I really wanted to do. I put the intention out into the world that that's what I was going to do, and nobody was going to stand in my way to do it. Nice. I just did it.
Hey,
so,
can you bang out a beat for us now?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Can you bang out a beat for us now?
You want me to make some noise?
Yeah, make some noise. Let's hear something.
Okay, I'll do a little bit for you.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
That is pro. You're definitely in the category of pro.
And I've seen some of your videos on YouTube and such, Dan, of doing drum solos and whatnot. It's amazing. I personally love the drums, my favorite instrument. So yeah.
I think they make the most noise. That's why I like it the most as well.
Dan, I know Toastmasters has played a very important role in your journey. Do you want to talk about how Toastmasters came into your life and the difference that it made?
Certainly. Well, my father, when I was right out of high school, transitioning into the college, and my dad realized how I was a little shy, and I was working with him a little bit. I was a commuter student, and I had long breaks between classes, and I would go work at his insurance office, just doing whatever he wanted, you know, filing and whatnot. And I would answer phones, and I would be very timid. And I didn't handle questions well. And it's an insurance company, so people will call and yell at you sometimes for no reason whatsoever. And I didn't like that. So he suggested I join a Toastmasters club. And we had one in my town, the Totally Toastmasters of Mandeville, Louisiana. And I joined very reluctantly initially. I was terrified. I couldn't stand to speak in public. I mean, in classes, I wouldn't even raise my hand to answer a question or ask a question. So I like the psychological technique of flooding. You face your fear head on in the worst case scenario. And that's exactly what I did. So I joined Toastmasters, agreed to participate in my first meeting, and of course we got to table topics, and they asked me a question. And when they were looking at me asking the question, my sense of hearing just totally went away. My sense of sight went away. I felt really dizzy, and I started to sweat, and my heart was beating a billion times a second, and I panicked like a deer in headlights. I couldn't really answer the question, and I stumbled and stumbled, and I was so embarrassed and so humiliated, you know, in my own mind, that I just sat down real quick, and I basically put my head down on the table, and I said, I don't know if I can do this. This is a bad deal. And then the next meeting I got there, and for some reason, everything just kind of eased up in my mind. I eased up. Mm-hmm. And when they asked me the table topics question the second week, it was sort of natural for me. And I answered it, you know, as though we were in just a normal conversation, you know, just hanging out one-on-one. And it was interesting, and I saw something in myself that I hadn't seen before. Just this calm attitude of, you know, I'm here, I can talk, I know my topic, I know the content, I know my story. Plus, I started to realize that my life has been an inspiration to a lot of people. Seeing me overcome these great adversities that I've faced, people kind of wanted to know my story. And although I had no idea how to get involved as a professional speaker and share my story in a public arena, I felt like I wanted to train myself to figure out how to tell that story. And Toastmasters was a good way to do it, and it was local. And it was a good support unit. You know, you get your instant feedback through your critiques, and it was great. So I attended the meetings regularly, and within 6 months, they nominated me as president of my chapter, and I served two consecutive terms as president, and really helped the people who were coming in under me face their fears. And ultimately, in the Toastmaster magazine, there was the Bill Gove speech workshop, which I attended. Steve Siebold was one of my biggest speaking mentors early on. And then I met Dr. Wayne Dyer and did some television work with him and major national venues with him. And now I'm on stages across North America doing this. You know, I put the intention out, did the work that was necessary, wouldn't take no for an answer. And now the reward, you know, I'm actually speaking. And all of that, I feel, is attributed to the training of the Toastmasters. Because, honestly, you couldn't get me on stage even if you drug me on the stage. I would just lay down and panic.
Right.
There's
right.
no way I could take a microphone and speak in front of people.
No drum set to hide behind either.
So, but the Toastmasters definitely helped me face the fear, overcome the fear, be able to respond to an audience. You know, the audience gives you feedback while you're speaking. And I like to improvise a lot. And I know we do the speech crafting and the manuals and Toastmasters, and it helped me create outlines and in a flow to my talks. And the time, especially, I'm pretty good with timing now. You know, as far as a 4 minute, 5 minute, hour long speech, I can pretty much get that. And I think it's all because of the Toastmasters training. So I'm just grateful that an organization like that exists to help people get over their fears and to refine their speaking abilities. Plus, it's a great platform to try new material.
Sure is. Hey, Dan, I have an important question for you. I noticed your title is pretty much former Toastmaster. What's with that?
Hey, hold on one second. Well, here's my deal. I go all the way when I do something.
Okay.
And at this point in my life, I'm extremely busy traveling. I just released a new book, The Gift of Fire, How I Made Adversity Work for Me. And I've been traveling with that book. And that basically right now is my all-in. If I join an organization or if I'm paying dues to an organization, I want to be present. And at this point in my life, I'm literally on the road, you know, 80% of the time. I can't be present at the meetings right now. I can't accept the leadership responsibilities. And I don't want to burden a club by my lack of presence.
Perfectly good explanation. You don't need to go any further. In fact, I was a member of 5 clubs and I'm down to 1. I have no good excuse.
And Dan, what role does music play in your life today? Because I understand you're not playing professionally now.
I've put that on hold a bit to favor the book.
Mm-hmm.
I've sort of made a little transition. But I still take gigs all the time.
Okay.
It's just I went from 10 gigs a week, which several on the weekends, to about 5 gigs a month now.
Oh, okay.
So I still play professionally. It's, you know, I'm just not playing every day of the week anymore. It's just I'm favoring the book because it's brand new. I'm trying to get as much media coverage as possible and as many speaking opportunities and book signings as possible. So likewise, I can't commit to any particular bands.
Sure.
So I'm not going to actively participate.
Well, Dan, here's your opportunity. Sell us the book. What's the book all about?
Yeah. Well, the book I just wrote, The Gift of Fire, How I Made Adversity Work for Me, available nationwide at all the major booksellers, as well as all the online.com resellers. The book is just a personal memoir. I share my experiences growing up with adversity, the insights that I've gained along the way, you know, the struggles and challenges and triumphs. And I realized that my life, these adversities that came into my life, were my greatest teachers.
Mm-hmm.
They've elevated me to new levels of awareness, new levels of consciousness, new levels of emotion, new levels of spirituality. And I really feel that if all of those benefits came from these struggles and horrors that we consider curses and miseries in our lives, how can I mean, really? Is it really a misery? Is it really a horror? Not at all. Not at all. I look at them as gifts, and I'm extremely grateful for my teachers. My burn is the great teacher. I struggled with some social issues, and that's my great teacher. They elevated me to new levels, and I can't possibly look at anything in a negative light because I always know now that there will be a positive outcome so long as I focus on the positives instead of the negatives. Now, once I dwell on that negativity, of course, that's all that I see, and this moment of horror is an eternity. But honestly, once I achieved my goal after the 7-year struggle with my tying my shoes, I looked back and it was an instant. 7 years became a blink of an eye. And what I gained from that was eternal. You know, the struggle is small in comparison to the insight gained from it. And I titled my book, The Gift of Fire, in order to sort of show my attitude toward life. Now, that wasn't my first title, however. My first title, I thought, would show a little bit more humor, and I wanted to call it Look, Ma, No Hands. But the publisher wouldn't go for that, so I had to change my title. But, I'm just honored to share my story. I'm just grateful for the opportunity to have this existence and these experiences here so I can share that. And if I can help to inspire just one person in this journey, you know, then every experience that I've ever faced is totally justified, is totally worth it. I wouldn't trade this for anything. You know, I don't like playing what if games. You know, what if I wasn't burned? What if I had hands? Right. I think that's insanity. That's not my reality. I'm not going to waste time and energy on thoughts and situations that can't exist.
Right.
This is my reality. I love this existence. I love these handlets, as I call them. I love the fact that I am bald up here and I've been since 2 years old. I love the scars. They've given me an identity. You know, and I just choose to look at things in that light. I can choose to be miserable. I can choose to be negative and go on hating the world for treating me the way they did earlier on. I can choose that. And everybody has that choice every single day. But I choose to live in love and not in hatred, not in intolerance. You know, so, I mean, my heroes are Gandhi. I mean, look at that. You know, he's a guy that should have been angry, you know, toward his government and should have, you know, manifested some major hostility and created an army and things. But he used civil disobedience, you know, civilized organization of resistance peacefully while still keeping love in mind first. And that's kind of how I try to look at things. If there's an injustice, of course, I'm going to address it. However, I am going to offer love and peace and gratitude while I'm doing that, you know. And it's a personal choice that we all face every moment of our lives.
Right.
And I think there's no reason to be in the negative. There's no reason whatsoever, regardless of what's going on in the world. Right. You know, there's always positives in every situation.
Well,
so just focus on those.
That's great, Dan. And I bet if your book has more of those golden nuggets in it, it'll be a huge bestseller. And I wish you all the success. How long has the book been out for?
It was published on March 1st.
Oh, brand new.
Oh, great.
Brand new and fresh. Once again, best of success with that book. I'm sure you're going to have it. Your story is very inspiring. And thank you very much for coming on our show and sharing it with us. We really do appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Ryan and Bo. Thank you. I appreciate it. It was fun being here. So.
Alrighty. It's good speaking
with
you.
Great to have you with us, Dan.
You take care.
Thank you. Namaste.
Bye.
And our listeners can find out more about Dan by going to his website, dancaro.com. That's dancaro.com. If folks do have listener feedback they'd like to share, you can always give us a call at our listener feedback voicemail line, 1-888-451-8862. You can post on our blog at ToastmastersPodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter, twitter.com/theTM Podcast. And of course, you can always send us an email, podcast@toastmasters.org. We'd love to hear from you.
All right, folks. Well, until next time, my name is Bo Bennett.
And my name is Ryan Levesque.
Take care, everybody. Bye bye. Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.